You're listening to KJZZ's Here and Now. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. A new study from ASU's School of Social Work has discovered that more than 160 minors who've received treatment or services through Arizona's juvenile court system were victims of sex trafficking. Here to explain the significance and what else we should know is researcher Dominique Rosepowitz, director of the Office of Sex Trafficking Intervention Research at ASU. Dominique, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's define sex trafficking so we know what we're talking about.
So in this study, this is about minors, and minors fall under a category from the TVPA, which is a federal law that was passed in the year 2000, and it included anyone who was under the age of 18 who exchanged sex for anything, a place to stay, drugs, a meal, something commercial, as well as force, fraud, and coercion. So anyone under the age of 18 falls in that category. Anyone over the age of 18, you have to be able to prove force, fraud, or coercion, that they were enticed to sell sex against their will, or that they didn't get the proceeds or all of the pieces to that. So there's a little differentiation. In this one, it's just specifically about minors.
How complicated was this research?
This study was actually very simple. The Arizona Office of the Courts was very generous with their time. They allowed us to provide a survey, a training first, and then a survey to the agencies that they contract with for delinquency services. So we did a training, and then 4 weeks later, we sent a survey. About 28% of the agencies completed the survey, and from that, we received that there were 161 youth identified as sex trafficking victims.
When you're doing a first-time study like this, it must be difficult to know where trends are going. But based on your experience, is there a feeling that things are getting worse?
I think that simply we don't know the answer. We simply don't know how many exist because we don't know what we're looking for. So what we found is that with copying some of the wonderful research done with the domestic violence community, if we train people on what to look for, then they see it. If we don't train people on what to look for, they may suspect, they may consider that this is happening, but they don't have a definitive understanding and maybe not enough confidence to say, I believe this person falls into this category, which means that we need to create new programs for them. Because currently, in all of our systems, we don't have services specific for sex trafficking victims. And one of the things this study did show is that these kids do have unique needs. They have very high risk problems about mental health and substance abuse problems, identification as post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis, oftentimes are trafficked by people who are nurturing and loving to them or should be nurturing and loving to them, like a boyfriend or a parent. We have some gang involvement. So there are things that we learn from this study about what we need to do next, but we couldn't have known because they weren't identifiable until now.
What steps is the court system planning to take, as far as you know, based on the information you've provided?
So we had a lot of problems over the years about the chicken or the egg. Should we have treatment programs, or should we try to figure out how many kids are out there? And if we find that we have kids out there and we don't have treatment programs, what are we going to do? So the court, the Arizona Office of the Court, has been really responsive. We're very excited about, now we know this number, that very quickly they're going to integrate programs and treatment interventions into their contracts with delinquency providers. Using innovation, trying to find new techniques. One of the problems that we have working with this specific population is that they run away more often than any other type of delinquency that we see. So if we put them in an unlocked facility, they're more likely to run away. But their criminal behavior isn't under consideration. They're identified as victims here, so they shouldn't be in locked facilities. So we have some very significant considerations to sit down now and talk about. But 161 kids at the beginning of April of 2014 is a big number. That's a lot of kids who need very specific services. And if we don't address those treatment needs, now that we know they exist, they're going to be re-victimized, because that's what we know about child trauma. We know that if we don't address the things that line up to make them vulnerable, they will continue to be vulnerable until those things are addressed.
Do you think the general public, either based on naivete or see no evil, hear no evil, et cetera, just doesn't understand how significant this problem is? If it doesn't happen to someone you know, maybe that's not a real thing.
Very much like domestic violence 25 years ago, I think that we are in the very beginning of the anti-sex trafficking movement, that we have got this momentum behind us with people like Cindy McCain and some very interested federal organizations like the National Institute of Justice and Department of Health and Human Services. So we're at the beginning of this process. So we aren't a silo. Anti-trafficking, anti-sex trafficking specifically, is not a silo. Many of the clients that are identified in this study have been victims of domestic violence, childhood sexual abuse. other experiences that are really dangerous to them and push them towards this vulnerability for victimization. But we have to start at the beginning. We have to start with informing people. We have to start educating people that this is not the movie Taken. These are local girls and boys. These are people among us. These are kids that your kids are going to school with. They are absolutely part of the fabric of our country and our community. And if we don't meet those needs, it's like having a terrible secret. If we don't address that secret, it will continue to fester and continue to follow them until it's addressed.
When you mention loved ones, whether it's spouse, boyfriend, girlfriend, or mom or dad, how much of this is a socioeconomic situation? Can we stereotype it that way or no?
We cannot. We have something called love bombing that we have identified in the boyfriend recruitment situation. So 19 of the 37 kids that were identified with specifics in this study identified that it was a boyfriend who recruited them and got them to exchange sex for something. And the words love bombing makes good sense in this character in a situation that they really deeply fall in love with this person, that they've filled some gap within them, that they've shown them affection and attention in a way that's really unique to them, and they feel like a princess or they feel like they're taken care of. And that alone propels them into this victimization. It part of the problem that we run into is then they don't identify as a victim. So we can see it's law breaking, it's a statute violation, but that person says, but I'm just collecting money for us and we're going to have a better future because of this.
Is this something that is focused just on young women or young men affected as well?
So we don't know how many of the 161 were male. We do know that of the very specific data that we had on 37 kids, two of them were males. I work closely with Tumbleweed Youth Services here in the Phoenix area, and we identify within one of the groups that we offer called Sex Trafficking Awareness and Recovery that the majority of the kids that voluntarily attend, they're 18 to 24-year-olds, are male or transgender, and we do find that males are absolutely involved in this, but again, we have almost no understanding of their experience. We're learning, but we can't say, why aren't we doing things for boys unless we have some concept of what that experience looks like for them.
Researcher Dominique Rosepowitz, Director of the Office of Sex Trafficking Intervention Research at Arizona State University. Thanks so much.
Thank you.